It's time for Let's Talk with Brian Pettaway.
Good morning. Happy Sunday. Welcome to Let's Talk. I'm your host, Brian Pettaway, and I'm going to be here with you like I am every Sunday morning for about an hour. And like always, I've got a great show for you. You know, I'm on social media quite a bit. I mean, it's a part of my job. It's what I do. I research news stories. I try to find out what's going on current in the world. But what I've also noticed on social media, which pops up on my timeline often, are dating apps, dating groups trying to draw me in to the dating scene. Now, I got to be honest. I mean, after my marriage at the advanced age of 50, I had to try and figure out how I was going to start dating again. I didn't know. I had been married for quite some time. So I did get on a dating app. I got onto two, actually, and it was overwhelming. And what I realized quickly is three things. A, there's a lot of misrepresentation going on online with people saying who they are when they're not that person. B, there's a lot of people out here, men and women, who aren't actually looking for long-term committed relationships, so obligatory relationships. They're just looking to get it in. You know what I'm saying? Trying to have a little bit of fun here, have a little bit of fun there, but not really be committed to anybody. And C, that there is a lot of competition, in particular in the DMV, between men and women, especially black men and women, that makes it hard to gel. So, you know, I'm no longer on any dating apps. I've kind of removed myself from all of that. But I do want to talk about how difficult it might be to find your mate at this point in time in the DMV. And I want to talk about it with someone who's actually still in the dating pool. And she's going to tell me from her perspective what it's like to be a black woman out here trying to find a mate in this area. And how difficult it is, if it's difficult, why it's difficult, and what she's looking for in particular, and what she thinks that a lot of women today are looking for, especially over the age of 40, and why men might be out here swinging and missing. And of course, we've got the Petty. He's going to be with us this weekend, and he's going to tell us exactly what's going on in the world of baseball. The O's are absolutely killing it. I'm sure he's got some football information. We got a couple of big boxing matches coming up. I'm sure he's got some information on that, so I can't wait to talk to him. But first, you know, there's so much going on in the world that I've got to talk about, because informing you is what I love to do. So I hope you're feeling great, because I'm feeling great. I've got lots to talk about, so let's get right to it. Well, the Mitchell Courthouse in Baltimore has seen a full week of the Squeegee trial, the very high-profile case, which has actually garnered national attention, of a teenage Squeegee worker accused of killing a 48-year-old man armed with a bat near the Inner Harbor last summer. One of the more interesting happenings in the case happened on Thursday when Warren Brown, the defense attorney for the teenager accused of killing Timothy Reynolds, suggested that Mr. Reynolds was a member of the white supremacist group, the Proud Boys. And he based that accusation on the fact that Timothy Reynolds, during the autopsy, was shown to have had a tattoo on his neck that read Mutant and Proud. The Reynolds family actually broke out into laughter and chuckling when they heard that accusation, stating later that it was humorous to all of them to hear that accusation because that tattoo was actually a reflection of how much Timothy Reynolds loved the comic series The X-Men, and the slogan Mutant and Proud comes directly from that comic book series. The Reynolds family attorney, Thiru Vignaraja, while not finding the accusation or the suggestion humorous, did say that this is par for the course for a defense attorney who does not have a defense. There was also some damaging testimony for the defense from the medical examiner, who revealed that Reynolds' blood alcohol level was at 0.03% at the time of his death, which is well below Maryland's legal limit of 0.08%. That revelation unraveled the defense's argument that Reynolds was acting in an alcohol-fueled rage. The other revelation by the medical examiner, which further complicates the teenager's self-defense claim, is that Timothy Reynolds was shot 5 times, including 3 times, in the back. It was not a good day for the defense, and the prosecution did close its case following the 3 days of testimony. The defense team of Warren Brown for the teenager said that it will not call any new witnesses, and closing arguments are expected to take place on Monday morning. Also in the news this week in Baltimore is a place that's near and dear to my heart growing up in Baltimore, and it's in the news again because of, unfortunately, the violence that continues to happen there, and that's Edmondson Village. I grew up on Baltimore's west side, and oftentimes, especially in the summer, my friends and I would ride our bikes up to Edmondson Village. It was about maybe 2 miles from our house. And for us, that was a long distance. And Edmondson Village being the destination gave us an opportunity to kind of be independent. And I promise you, not one time that I was at Edmondson Village when I was a kid did I feel unsafe. Not once. Well, clearly, these days are not those days, as Edmondson Village continues to stay in the news for, unfortunately, the violence that occurs there over and over again. One of those situations is in the summer of 2017. Thieves stormed into the dollar store there, stealing cash and leaving manager Derek Ford shot dead. Now, on Thursday, the family of Derek Ford slapped the shopping center with a lawsuit alleging that the center failed to keep the area safe. The lawsuit claims the center's security firm, Progressive Security, is a fraudulent organization. It alleges that the company's chief operating officer had posed as a former police officer, but instead had been twice convicted of impersonating a police officer. The lawsuit claims that the owner was on probation at the time the security contract was signed, and that he isn't licensed to be a security guard or manage a security company. Now, many of us remember, I'm sure, in January, that five students from Edmondson High School at lunchtime went across the street to Edmondson Village to have lunch at Popeyes, a business, like all of the businesses in Edmondson Village, were not supposed to be selling minors during school hours. But they did it anyway. Something that, if a security company was above board, would have been monitoring and ultimately shutting down and getting those kids out of there. But that's not something that's happened, because apparently this security company that had a contract with Edmondson Village in the city was fraudulent. So my question is, who is doing a background check on these security companies? I mean, how do you not know, as an owner that is hiring a security company for your businesses, that the owner of the potential security company that you're hiring is not on probation for impersonating a police officer when he's impersonating a former police officer while dealing with you? If I am the spouse of the person that lost their lives in the dollar store, not only would I go after the security company, I don't know what you're going to get from them if they're fraudulent, but not only would I go after them, but I would go after the owners of the mall who hired that security company. To me, it appears that their laziness and lack of diligence in finding out who they were hiring and what credentials they actually had is what's cost several young people and that young man who was the manager of that dollar store their lives. Also in the news, but nationally this week, something that has really irked me, annoys me, pisses me off, and honestly, it kind of surprises me too that it's as egregious and out in the open as it is. It just lets us know how far backwards this country is going. Florida public schools will now teach students that some black people benefited from slavery because it taught them useful skills. That's part of new African American history standards approved by the Florida State Board of Education that the teachers union has blasted as a step backwards. And honestly, it only gets worse. Other language that has drawn the ire of some educators and education advocates includes teaching about how black people were also perpetrators of the violence during race massacres. So places like Rosewood and Tulsa, Oklahoma, the curriculum will now teach high school students in Florida that black folks were not only victims, but also victimizers and perpetrators of violence during these massacres. Updates to the African American history curriculum were required by a controversial 2022 law that Governor Ron DeSantis dubbed as the Stop Wrongs to Our Kids and Employees Act, or the Stop Woke Act. Now look, it was one thing, and I thought it was bad enough, and it was, when Ron DeSantis decided that he was going to remove African American history from the classroom, right? When he was going to water it down. But this is a whole nother animal here. Now he's not only doing that, but he's advocating to have our history rewritten, and that slavery itself was not that bad for black folks. In fact, it was beneficial to us because we learned a new skill. Skills that we would be able to use later on that we would not have learned had we not been kidnapped and brought here. That slap in the face is huge. It's a huge slap in the face. But if that wasn't enough, we also have to sit idly by and allow him to have his curriculums in Florida teach students that black folks were equally responsible for the race riots that occurred in this country, where hundreds and thousands of us were killed. Here's the thing, really, that boils my blood. It's that Ron DeSantis is not ignorant to the facts. Ron DeSantis graduated from Yale with a degree in history, in American history. He knows exactly what has gone on in this country. He knows the timeline, and he knows the consequences and results of those actions. He knows who the true perpetrators were, and he knows who the true victims are. And so what he's doing is not out of ignorance. What he's doing, I believe, is twofold. A, it's the agenda that he's setting that he hopes will get him into the White House. The agenda that will steal Donald Trump's base, racist base, if Donald Trump in fact ends up in jail or is disqualified from being a presidential nominee. The other thing is that I think Ron DeSantis, unlike Donald Trump, is a true racist. I think that Donald Trump is a raced opportunist, which is different from being a racist. I think Ron DeSantis is a true racist. So doing these things in Florida, setting these mandates for the Board of Education in Florida, knowing that other Southern and Republican states are going to follow, feeds and settles his racist soul. Now, the vice president flew down to Florida, had some words, but ultimately, it means absolutely nothing. And that's the thing that bothers me the most. We have positions of power in states and in local and federal government where the checks and balances for the people in the top seat are too few, where they don't have to answer for enough. And that will be the demise of our democracy. The other thing in the national news that has really annoyed me, boils my blood, is this thing with this nursing student, Carly Russell, who supposedly went missing last week for 48 hours and then returned home miraculously barefooted, but okay. There have been no details given on what happened while she was gone. The parents of Carly Russell nor Carly Russell will speak on it, saying that she is still getting over the ordeal. But during this time of she and her parents' silence, police are becoming skeptical or have become skeptical of the story that she's told, poking holes in that story by looking in her cell phone records where hours before she was supposedly abducted, she was in her phone looking up the movie Taken and trying to find out if Amber Alerts were available for adults. They found video of her in a store buying snacks for her boyfriend that weren't at the scene with her car, her wig, her cell phone, and her keys. Also, there was never any report from anyone else having seen a toddler on the road, which was a very busy road. It wasn't like this small country road. It was Interstate 459, which is a large interstate in Alabama. No one else reported seeing this toddler on the road, and no one reported a toddler missing. And the toddler has not been found that supposedly she was trying to rescue. So there's a lot going on here that looks like a hoax. And all I can say is I pray that that's not the case. Because if it is, if she is truly the black woman that cried wolf, she has really hurt black women everywhere. Because the next time a black woman goes missing, if this is in fact a hoax, the doubt will immediately be there as to whether they should spend the manpower and the money and the effort on trying to find this black woman that's missing. If it was just her wanting to spend a couple of days off the grid with her boyfriend, not wanting to have to answer to her parents or to her job, if it was something selfish like that, I don't know how we forgive that, because it hurts so many other black women and women of color. But unfortunately, as time goes on, every day it looks more and more like she fabricated the story. I left my heart. San Francisco. And finally, sadly, Tony Bennett, one of the most beloved and recognizable voices in the history of American popular music, died Friday at 96, less than 2 weeks shy of his birthday. In recent years, even as his velvety voice found purchase with a new generation, he privately faced a cognitive disorder. On February 1st of 2021, his family said in an AARP magazine that Bennett had had Alzheimer's for the previous 5 years, even though he still managed to record more music. Bennett is survived by his wife since 2007, Susan Benedetto, and four children, including Antonia Bennett, who has become an accomplished standard singer in her own right. Tony Bennett, dead at 96. Rest in peace. All right, let's shift gears. Like I said, I wanted to talk about dating in the DMV, in particular at the age of 40 and above. I'll just leave it at that. And I have a guest today. I was hoping to have a male and a female on the panel today, but I could only get a female, but she's dynamic. She's a very successful young lady, and she's in the dating pool, and she is in the age group that I was looking for, and I was referred to her by a friend of mine, someone that I'm close to, and so I want to pick her brain about what's going on with women and men in the dating scene in this area, and I got to promise you, it's a surprise to me that I'm even doing this show. It's not something that I typically do. But I said that on Let's Talk, we will talk about every and anything. And this is one of those things that people keep coming to me about. is dating in this area. So I want to talk to her and kind of pick her brain because she's been out here and she's been dating. And, you know, she's traveled. Like, she's just not been in the DMV. She's traveled around the world, throughout the country. She's very successful, upwardly mobile, highly educated, very attractive. And I want to get her take on what's going on in this area. So without further ado, 1500 family, please help me welcome Erica to Let's Talk. Okay, Erica, thank you so much for joining me today. I got to be honest. I thought I would never, ever, ever do a show about dating. It's not my shtick. So I'm glad you're here with me today to help me out. How you feeling?
I'm feeling great. Thanks for having me. I'm happy to be here.
Well, I'm happy to have you here. Like I said, it's just not my thing. I just never thought I'd be talking about dating. It's not something that I'm not a dating expert or dating guru, but I've heard so many things about how hard it is for both men and women to date, especially in the DMV after the age of 40. I figured I'd bring somebody on who might be able to enlighten me on why that is the case. So you're currently in the dating pool, right?
Yes, I would say I am currently in the dating pool. I sure am.
Okay. Now, have you found it difficult to date? Like, is it something that's difficult for you?
You know, I think it depends. I think there's various and varying stages. I don't find meeting men in the DMV to be hard, no. So okay. If you're thinking about the early stages of dating, you're going out, you're going to restaurants, you're going to clubs, you're meeting people through friends, you're going to parties. I meet men and I meet guys all the time. I think what I find hard at this stage of life is everyone is coming to the dating pool with some sort of baggage. If okay. You're not by the 40s, there could be something wrong. And so I think I have found that once you start dating and you're getting to know someone, what really becomes hard is, can you take on their baggage and do they want to take on yours? And that's okay. Where I think it gets really complicated.
What's weird is, so after my divorce, right, I did find myself in the dating pool at 50. And it was, you know, as you get older, the dating pool starts to shrink because at that age, people are either already married or they've been married and have decided that's not something they ever want to do again, right?
Very true.
Right?
Very true.
So it was difficult, and I found myself on dating apps, and there's a lot that goes on these dating apps. It's like almost overwhelming a little bit. What vehicle do you use in order to date? Is it organic, or are you on dating apps?
Yeah, so for a very long time, and by a very long time, I mean maybe like 5 to 7 years, I was using the apps and definitely was going on dates and was definitely meeting men. And they were a lot of them were wonderful men, some of them not so much. I don't know if anyone's ever familiar with the movie Hellraiser, but there was one date that I went on with a guy that I met, and I sat down. And he had Hellraiser hair, and he ate off of my plate on the first date the entire time and actually finished the meal. And I thought, okay, well, I'm not quite sure this is the right one for me, but I appreciated it. And then there were others where we dated for years, and they were really great relationships, but at some point we were just no longer compatible. But fairly recently, I got off the apps. I think for me, and I think for a lot of people, for a lot of women, you kind of go through an ebb and flow. You know, okay. For a while, you're in this place where the apps maybe are working for you and you're enjoying it. I know many people that have found their one via the apps, but I know others where they don't like that platform and maybe they haven't had a good experience. I decided to try something different. I came to a place fairly recently, and by recently, I mean the past 3 years, where I said to myself, I think the guy for me and the guy that I am the woman for, because it's definitely both ways, of
right,
course,
right.
I'm probably going to meet through people that know me best.
Okay.
Because that is where I've actually have found more long-term success. And my best relationships have come through someone introducing me to someone else or being in the same place where we have common interests and meeting in a very organically space, organic space.
So let me ask you this. When you start dating, are you coming to the situation with expectations of men being where you are in life as far as education, status, finances? What is your expectation of that guy?
Yeah, I do not. I believe when I was younger, I probably did. I no longer now come with those type of expectations. So what are my expectations now? My expectations now deal with respect, politeness, kindness, maybe a good conversation, and a desire for a man to want to be present in the date.
Okay.
Right? If you've asked me out, or if we've been set up, you must be ready for something, or you're interested in something, or there's an interest.
Right.
And so now my expectations align with all of those attributes. I now am no longer in a place where I say to myself, oh, he needs to have as many degrees as I do, or he needs to make as much money as I do or more, or he needs to be this height or this weight or have this much hair or not, or have five dogs, or, you know, whatever it may be. I think that, again, by this stage in life, everything is complicated.
Right.
And if you set up too many of those expectations and barriers, you're eliminating really wonderful quality people. Or for me, I feel I am eliminating really good men that maybe I would have missed them if I had set too many bars and standards and roadblocks. And I think women sometimes have to be careful. Are we setting the roadblocks for ourselves in love? Or is something or someone else? And I was finding for me that many times I was setting the roadblock because I was not opening myself up to someone else, because maybe we lived on a different side of town, or like they didn't like something, or I didn't like something, or you know what I mean? Like there was too many standards.
Right.
There were too many expectations.
What's weird to me is you're like an anomaly, because the people that I met when I was on these apps, it seemed like within the first minute or so, literally, the question is what do you do for a living? Right?
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
And it was felt like I was being sized up financially by whatever I told them my job was.
Sure.
And it seemed almost invasive. Now, I don't know if that's the case, but I got it every single time. And I wondered if that was the standard. So I was asking my guy friends, and like, yeah, dog, that's, we get it all the time. Like, I don't know what it is. And a lot of these people moved here from other places, and it wasn't the case in other places that they lived. And I don't know if that's just for women in the DMV, if they just have an expectation that a guy needs to be this, that, or the other before they can continue on a conversation. But I promise you, I got that question 95% of the time. Literally, they wouldn't even know my last name. They wouldn't know anything about me other than they were just curious what I did for a living. Mm-hmm. So is that a standard practice that women go to? I mean, is that a tactic to find out what a guy's worth is?
Yeah, so it's two things. So the one thing that I want to say is my career profession is very forward-facing, external, interpersonal. I have to interact with a lot of people. I have a mentor who once said to me, here are the five questions in general when meeting anyone new, your barber, you know, your best friend's childhood, X, Y, and Z, you're on a date, whatever it may be. Here are five questions you shouldn't ask people. And one of them was, what do you do?
Right.
Because unfortunately, so I stopped doing that. So I say that not only do I not have that be one of my questions in dating, I now no longer ask individuals that question in general.
Okay.
I find other questions to ask. And here was why. The first thing is no matter who you are and what you're doing, what do you do can be such an insecurity, judgmental, I'm sizing you up question.
Right.
Even if that is not someone's intent, right? In asking, maybe some people just ask the question because they don't know what to ask. But the reality of it is most people probably find that question as I'm sizing you up.
Right.
So if you're dating someone and you want them to feel your warmth, male or female, you want to put your best foot forward. You want to give them your good energy. You want to appear engaging. Why would I then ask them a question that's going to make them feel insecure, judged, or written off? So I stopped asking that question.
Okay. What about the height thing? Because that's another thing that us guys have an issue with. Now, I'm fortunate that I'm over 6 feet, but a lot of guys who are not are faced with the problem of being looked over, no pun intended, because they're 5'10 or less. So yeah. I'm wondering what that's all about. Because I got some good friends, some good dudes that are not as tall, but they're good guys. And they can't find dates because, you know, they don't meet the height requirement.
Well, the first thing I'm going to do is a lesson learned here for all the listeners. Brian, I would be remiss and in poor form to say to you, you can send them my way because I don't have a height problem. A good dude is a good dude, which should be every woman's response. Two, as a woman that is 5'8", I actually have found that I actually have a tendency of attracting short-term men. Here's where I'm going to number three, although the guy that I am dating now is tall, but it was kind of by accident. But number three, an interesting statistic for listeners, and I wish I knew it specifically, but I read in an article recently that only like 30% of men are even over 6 feet.
Okay.
So I think for, and if you're a guy looking for a tall woman, you're probably not going to find that many over 6 feet either, right?
Right, right.
Or some men who really want women who are super petite, right? That percentage isn't as high. I think what I would say to people is we have to be careful. Women have to be careful that we, that is a perfect example of blocking our happiness and opportunity, right?
Right.
We can't control genetics, folks. We can't control human evolution, right? Ladies, do not block yourself because he's 5'5", because he's 5'7", because he's 5'6". I realize for some that could be hard. And so if you do, that is okay. That is your choice. There is no judgment. And if you are okay, then that maybe you are eliminating 30% more of the dating pool. If you can go home at night and know that maybe I'm out on a date on Friday night because I was okay with the guy that is 5'6", but you are not because you have eliminated 30 to 40 or 50% of the dating pool, then so be it. However, when I need my ride or die, I'm not going to care about his height.
Right. There you go. So let me ask you this question. How are guys swinging and missing? How are we missing the boat when it comes to meeting someone that has potential for us to love? What do we do that you suggest that we don't?
Yeah, you know, one of my really good guy friends, I have a guy friend that is like, he is just so good at dating. He dates women in a way that sometimes women size up men.
Okay.
And I'm not saying that men don't size up women, but he really approaches women from a women's point of view as many ways as Steve Harvey. What's the book about? Think like a woman, walk like a man. Like, I don't know what that book is called,
yeah,
right? But like,
yeah.
Put it from the lens of the opposite gender. So for men, really work on your conversation skills.
Okay.
You've got to be able to talk to a woman.
I keep hearing that. Yeah.
And I don't mean like unpacking the stock market or the inner workings of, I don't know, what is happening in celebrity culture to the point of how many children Nick Cannon now has. That's his business. But what I am saying is if that is your interest and you think someone is there, really sit down and engage. After you ask me how my day is going, say, hey, how is your day going? What made it great, right? Not just don't ask me how my day is. Give me a little bit more, because by asking me what made it great or what made it bad, I'm able to zone in on something specific, and then I'm able to keep a conversation going, right? So I think the conversation is really big. I think the second piece is really watch and observe a woman. You know, see what she's eating, see how she's laughing, see how she's interacting with friends. You know, don't be afraid to approach a woman if she's in a group of people.
That is very intimidating, though. I got to tell you.
Yeah, I know. I don't think women know that.
It's very intimidating.
I learned that last month. I never knew that a group of women was an intimidating situation for a man.
Absolutely. It's one thing to be rejected by that person. But it's another thing to be rejected by that person in front of three or four other women, right? It's a horrible feeling. So I've always been afraid. I mean, I don't have to worry about that now, but I've always been afraid that when I saw a woman and she was with three or four of the women, or hell, even if with another woman, like I never approached her. Never. Now, if I got serious eye contact or something or a smile, then perhaps. But just off the break, I would never do it.
Yeah. So I am so glad that you said that. I would think on the flip side for women, start doing more things by yourself. I mean, I have started to do that. I'm not going to say it has worked, but that would really be a disconnect between women and men really understanding each other, right?
Right.
I as a woman, I have no problem going up to a guy with a group of men. I actually probably like it more than if he's by himself.
Really?
Oh, I think so. I think so. I don't know. I see a group of men. And I see them having fun, and I see them really feeling themselves, and they're with their friends, and they're laughing, and they're having a good time. I say to myself, I want to go join their good time.
Wow. Okay.
And then I go into that good time with the group of men, and then from there, very quickly, I figure out which one or two I may want to put my energy toward, and which ones I don't. I actually think it's very opposite, and many of my girlfriends feel that same way. Some of our best nights was with the group of men that we saw that we went and approached.
Right, but that's, you know, and that's the flip side of being a man or being a woman. Men are accepting of that. We don't feel that is an invasion. But women are not. Like, it's almost like stalkerish or kind of rude or breaking up the part. Like, they're just not, it's kind of weird when a guy just jumps in and starts feeding off of the energy of four different women and then choosing which one he wants to be a part of. Unless you like Denzel or Idris, you're not going to get away with that, right? So men, however, we're far more accepting of something like that.
That's very interesting. Yeah, I would say that, well, what I would say is for women specifically, learn to do more things on your own and not need the pack. I think both for men, definitely change those communication skills. If it's a hi, how was your day? And I reply back and I give more and I get to stick at the word fine.
Right.
You will go nowhere. Because what that's showing to me is I'm always going to have to pull out of you.
Right.
I'm always going to have to pull. I'm always going to have to pull. I'm always going to have to pull. And ultimately, when you're in that space, it stops something from being natural. It stops it just from feeling good. And it stops from making it feel like, okay, this can be easy. You know, many of my guy friends say to me, especially the ones that are with the right women for them, they always say to me, she brings me peace.
Okay.
She brings me peace.
That's huge. That literally, when you get to my age or you get to an age of 40, 45, peace is everything.
Yeah.
Peace is the thing. So when you find a woman that brings you peace, she's one.
Correct.
For real. That's she's right. really one.
Yeah. And I would say, you know, what I would say to men and women is, you know, like when I'm dating, you know, knowing that and knowing that I want a man that brings me peace, right? If I've got to sit here and extract who you are or who we could be or what we're going to do or just trying to figure out who you are, like, who do you want to win the NBA finals, right? Like, if I have to extract stuff, it's a tremendous turnoff.
Okay.
Because that's not peaceful to me.
Well, one of the things I also found very interesting and disappointing at the same time was women have a hard time with men that have children. They do not want to date men with kids, right? And it's weird because if a man is not in his child's life, then he's a deadbeat. He's not something that any woman wants to deal with. But if a man is in his child's life, they don't want to deal with him either. So it's a catch 22.
Yeah. So what I always wonder when I have female friends or when I meet women who say this, I oftentimes wonder and sometimes have asked what their experience has been. Right. Because I feel like we live in such a baby's mama, baby daddy culture. I don't even know if that terminology is right and appropriate, but I'm going to use it. Right. And so I feel like what happens to men and women, really women more than men, though, is, oh, I meet a guy and he has a kid. Oh, that means there's another woman involved. That's drama.
Right.
That's a headache. That's a this, that's a that. I think we have to start normalizing that no, it doesn't have to be. And no, it isn't. And maybe these two people have actually ended it. They are trying to co-parent, but ultimately there's more than enough room to go around. Co-parenting and parenting looks different for every man, woman, and child.
Oh,
I know
absolutely.
Very few people that are doing it the same way, right?
Right.
I think when we as women, especially at this stage in your life, there are some women that don't want to be a mother. Let's be clear about that.
Right.
But there are some women that maybe are open, that want to be, and are open it if it's in a step capacity, and will embrace it and are ready to rise to the occasion. But I do realize that there are a lot that when they meet a man that has kids, their immediate thinking goes to, oh, this is going to be work and trouble with a third person in the mix. And I think that is, we all have our experiences, and so we are a reflection of that. But that can be dangerous to your point, because maybe that's not the case, right? Maybe you're writing off a really great man and opportunity. And I think everyone has to remember, someone's only three once.
Right.
Right? The relationship lasts forever. The kid is only five once. The kid is only 10 once.
Right.
So don't completely write that off or let it go. If you're looking for something long-term, that long-term and that relationship is going to last longer than that kid ever actually being a kid. It's such a temporary space. I think it's hard for us to remember that in the heat of the moment.
And also because we're in a microwave generational type situation. Yep. Everybody wants instant gratification. But the other thing that I heard, and I had someone tell me this when I was out there dating like that, that it's not necessarily the baby mama, but it's the fact that I was paying child support, and that was money that could have been going to our vacation or to, you know what I'm saying? It was like, so, and I thought, like, did you really say that to me? And you don't even, like, we haven't even gone on a date. know what I'm saying?
Yep.
Like,
yep.
It's that kind of stuff that's out there that blew me away to make me very, very cynical about dating these days.
Yes. So, Brian, for me, that is a red flag in compatibility.
Right.
And I think one of these, like, Instagram dating guru self-help people that I listen to, there are so many of all different shades and genders and ethnicities that I like. But there's one, a woman that came across my my path. I think her name is Mel Robbins. She talked about the difference between compatibility and love and finding the right person and the mistakes that we're making in relationships. It is about finding the person that I'm compatible with. So if you are a woman and you ultimately have that thinking and understanding of what it is to date a man with a child, then you as a woman are not compatible with any man that has a child.
Right. Right.
So that woman, similar to the height issue, should then realize that 30 to 40 to 50% of men are no longer going to be optional or eligible for her. She needs to be okay with that. And then she needs to go find that rare one out there that's still a good dude and happens to be 45, 50, 60, whatever age, and possibly never had a child. I don't know those men. I've never met those men. I don't know how you could get to that stage in life, especially as a man, and especially if you're a good one. And there's a difference between good men and nice men.
Right.
But especially if you're a good one and not having had and brought this beautiful opportunity into the world. But what I often say to women and to men, what I say to people is then are you two really compatible? Because that's a compatibility issue. What you want is someone that has no responsibilities.
This is
so
true.
So then you got to go find someone that has no responsibilities like you do.
When you date, when you meet someone, do you tell them up front what your long-term goal is, whether it's to be married or just to have a long-term friendship, to just have an intimate relationship? Casual kind of situation. How do you discuss that? How do you tell people what you're expecting? Well, you just blurt it out. You just tell them right up front.
So I am in a place with dating where I approach every opportunity very specifically in that moment with that man, right?
Okay.
Because I think I have learned in my experiences that when I was younger and dating, I was listening the wrong way to what a man was saying to me. This goes back to communication, right?
Okay.
And so I wasn't really always hearing it. And so I was probably getting the answers to many of my questions, or he was probably asking me the right questions, and I just didn't realize it because I hadn't shown up in the right way. So it depends. So, for example, I went out on a date last week, and the gentleman that I went on a date with was really wonderful. It was a great first date, but he was a really good communicator.
Okay.
He was a talker, which was so refreshing, because to be honest with you, I got to sit there and really just listen. And he didn't talk too much.
I was going to ask, did he talk too much?
Nope, he didn't talk too much.
Okay.
But he was a good talker. And so I very quickly realized that it was not going to be needed for me to immediately have to put out what I wanted. He was going to end up asking me.
Okay.
So okay. I allowed for that moment to happen. Now, there are some men that I've been on dates with, and they too have been really good dates, and they are very good men. However, their life experience didn't always have them asking probably the right questions up front. And so then from that, those experience and those opportunities, very quickly I learned, oh, wait a minute, let me set my boundary. Let me set what I'm looking for. Let me set my interest fairly quickly, because this could very well determine if this date is going sour or not, and if there will be a second or a third date. And most times, 9 out of 10, the men appreciated it.
Okay. Okay.
I feel like you have to, you know, I no longer go into experiences in my life. We are the sum of our experiences and of our life, right? However, I'm not taking a bad one into the next one, into the next one, into the next one. I leave it with that bad experience, just like I leave the good with the good, only hoping that the next one will be as good as the next good one. I really apply to dating that way, which is also why I think I say to you, I'm not sitting here feeling as though there are no good men out there. I don't subscribe to that. I have been on dates with a lot of really good men. And in the end, the difference between date 3 or year 3 came down to compatibility.
Okay. That makes sense. It makes a lot of sense.
You know what I mean? Not because, Brian, there are no good men out there.
Right.
No, there are. It's that I changed how I showed up when I was dating, and I changed how I was showing up with men.
I am in talking to my friends, and I've experienced this too, but in talking to my friends, we have all experienced a lot of quote unquote masculine energy from women. And understanding the Me Too movement, understanding the equality in the workplace and equity, and understanding the equal pay scales or a lack of it. We understand that authority and status now is something that women have in the workplace. But it doesn't seem like some women can turn that off, right?
Yeah.
It's always there. And for an alpha guy, that's a turnoff. Like, it's not something that we really want to spend any time competing against or with. So how do we figure out how to gel and be compatible in situations where both of us have authority at work, right?
Yeah.
And the guy is looking for the feminine side of the woman. How do we break through that?
Yeah, so I really appreciate you asking this question, because I am definitely a woman that has struggled with this. Full disclosure, I am a single woman. I have been engaged before. I have never been married. I'm going to say that to the viewers. I'm sure some people are like, oh, there's something wrong with it. No, there's nothing wrong with me. I have had tremendous boyfriends.
Okay.
I have been in long-term relationships.
Right.
I love love. I have been told that I am a great person to date, right?
Okay.
I was raised by a strong man. I had a tremendous father, and I had a really great male role model. And I am a woman that feels as though I have really healthy, good relationships with men. I have great relationships with my male bosses. I have best friends that are men. I get along with my friends, husbands, and spouses in healthy ways, you know, without anyone having to keep an eye up or wake at night or wonder what a dynamic is. It
right.
can all exist, ladies and gentlemen. Let's not act like we have to live in untrustworthy and unsafe spaces when we talk about the genders.
Okay.
I know there's been a lot of conversation in the past year or two or three about the femininity and the showing up and the masculinity of men and women. There has been the debate that if a man shows up in X, Y, and Z, or how he shows up determines what he gets from his woman in terms of that space. I think that is true. I also think the same thing applies for women as well and how they show up with men.
Okay.
You know, I am a woman that has a deep voice, as many of your listeners know. It's genetic. I don't know why, but I do. And I am definitely a headstrong, confident woman. I don't deem myself as an alpha woman, but some people say so. I don't think that's a bad thing. I don't think it is. I think it's beautiful whomever you are.
Okay.
It has never worked against me in having to be vulnerable to a man. My vulnerability that I give to men ultimately comes down to the right man.
Okay.
I have dated men where I said, oh, this isn't safe. I do not feel I can be authentic. I do not feel I can rub his back. I do not feel I can hold his hand. I do not feel as though I can guide him and I can love him and I can lift him and I can empower him. And that's what I want to do. But at the same time, those were also men that were, they weren't doing that for me.
I got
right?
you.
Right. I think we as individuals, as men and women, have to wake up every day and ask ourselves, how are we showing up in our spaces and with people? And if I show up, you know, if I'm getting into an argument with a man, with my guy, with a man, and, you know, it gets aggressive and it gets rough. Not that that's ever happened, but I'm giving hypotheticals and examples.
Okay.
And I come back, yeah, I can see if he's like, oh, she's given her masculinity. And it's like, well, yeah, because I feel threatened.
Right.
My defense is up. I think women do have to also represent that about men. There's nothing wrong. I can go home and work and have a powerful job and also make my man a meal and not lose myself. He can go be the CEO of a company or a tremendous athlete or a great business owner or a teacher or, you know, custodial staff and come home and rub my back and let me know it's going to be okay and turn on our favorite Netflix, TV show and make dinner. He is not a less of a man. If anything, I think he is probably the man. Right?
Right.
I think we have to check universally, whether it's in dating, whether it's in friendships. Are you bringing that loyalty? Are you bringing that trust? Are you bringing that support? How are you showing up in spaces? And if you are not grounded in knowing that you have shown up the right way, you have shown up with care, you have shown up with the right listening skills, you have shown up with an open mind, you have shown up with kindness, you are able to give that love. I don't care who you are or what you look like. You can be 5'10", a size 2, and, you know, a top model. Or you can be, you know, a female bodybuilder with what, you know, it won't matter.
Right.
It will come off in whatever negative way someone perceives to be, or it will come off in the nicest, most loving, kind, open way. We have to own how we show up. And I don't know how much I always subscribe to universally that's a gender thing, uh-huh, as much as it's just a natural energy thing.
When you start dating someone, how long do you take before you start introducing them to your friends or your family?
Okay. Yeah, I love this question. Because I think that this answer or this action from a male or a female very much speaks to, for me, those are the levels. So, for when it comes to family, I mean, I really have to be, if you're going to meet my parents, I really have to be confident and secure with us in our relationship and really with you. I mean, we have probably really dated or we have been in each other's lives a really long time. We have probably been through some stuff, right? But what I can tell you is that I feel safe with the person.
Okay.
My friends... the good, let's say, you know, there's acquaintances, there's different circles there. An acquaintance, you know, maybe a couple of dates, 6 or 7 dates, 8 dates. My good friends, best friends, friends that you would invite to a wedding, friends that are there to celebrate a promotion, friends that you can go on vacation with, because we all know the vacation is the test.
Right.
We can't vacation together. We can't really be that compatible
right,
on anything,
exactly.
Right? 3 to 4 to 5 months. At this stage of my life, because for me, I am someone that is evolving, that the older I get, the more protective I get. Okay. And I think that's normal. And I think that's natural. Again, with my parents, it could be 9, 10 months, a year. I really got to be into, but more importantly, I have to really feel safe, because for me in my life, I am super close with my parents. They are they are my everything. So to know me is to know them.
Okay.
So by then I've said to myself, well, I want this person to know me on that level. I realize not everybody has that, right?
Right.
Some people are able to jump into it sooner. Some don't jump into it at all. I have dated guys where, I dated this one guy. We dated for a while. We had a really great relationship. I did notice that I met certain members of his family. I met his sisters. I met his brothers. I met his friends. He would talk about him, and he would talk about his kids. And I knew that he was talking about his kids. He would speak to them about me.
Right.
And he would speak to me about them, and we would send photos, and he would send me photos, and we did all these things. Ultimately, though, I ended up never meeting his kids.
Okay.
And I realized it was because when we ended it, we broke up, he actually got to a place sooner than I did, that he knew that we were in each other's lives for a season and not for the long haul. And he had decided that he was not going to have me go that far. And I actually appreciated it, because once we had a conversation about it, I shifted as well. And he was actually right. We were a season dating experience, and it was a great one. We talk all the time. We're friends.
Right.
However, I'm actually really glad that I didn't meet his kids. And I'm very glad that he never met my best friends.
Interesting.
He was a season, and it wasn't worthy of it.
Do you feel that knowing someone's sexual history is important?
Interesting. I did when I was younger. I, for some reason, do not now. No.
Interesting. Why do you think that is?
Well, number one, I do hope at this point for me, I'm a responsible adult. So at this point, number one, if it's from a risk precaution, you are talking about contraceptives, right? You are asking
right,
each other,
right.
Are you this, are you that, are you on this, or, you know, so like, you know, at 25, I'm not quite sure we were always asking that question of each other.
More right.
You know what I mean? Everyone was kind of beating around the bush.
Right,
some people
right.
did, right? Now you ask. And so if there's that concern, conversation is had fairly quickly, right?
Okay.
If it is about someone, if it is about performance and good opportunities and bad opportunities, instead of asking that to be inquisitive to know whether or not I want to be intimate with the person, I now look at that as a really healthy form of conversation to help build intimacy. Right.
Okay.
So, you know, number one, you never know if anyone's ever going to be honest. Let's
Correct.
Just be clear.
That's right? Number one. You're absolutely right.
That's number one. And even when they are, I find that people still don't believe it.
Right.
Right.
Exactly.
So at some point, if you know this, you have to, you can't obsess over it.
Right.
Because it could really destroy something. Number two, it goes back to how you and I started this conversation. Everybody at a certain point in life is if you're dating or you're married or you're dating, you're intimate with people.
Right.
That's part of love and relationship.
Right.
Right. Number three, if you're at this stage of life, you're responsible. So I guess I just don't have the same worries and fears and concerns, and I don't have the same pressure that I felt when I was dating in my younger years now as I did then.
Wow. Erica, I got to have you back, man. You're full of it. You're full of knowledge.
I appreciate you. This was so much fun.
It has been my pleasure. Absolutely. So thank you so much. You're now officially a part of the 1500 family and Let's Talk. And you don't mind if I call you up again, do you?
Not at all. I hope you do.
All right, Erica. You take care of yourself.
You too. And don't forget to hook me up with those single short friends you got.
You know I will.
Just saying, Brian.
You know
Just
I
saying.
Will. You know
Just
I will.
I'm open. Equal opportunist over here.
All right. Take care of yourself.
Take care.
You know, that wasn't that bad. I actually enjoyed having Erica on the show and listening to what she had to say. I actually learned some things. I hope all the guys did. I hope some of the women did as well. But I know you hear the music, and on this show, that can only mean one thing. It is time for the Petty. Let's get him on the line and see what he's got to say this week.
Good morning. Good morning, Brother B. How are you?
I'm good. Petty, how you doing this morning?
I'm doing just great. Happy Sunday to you.
Absolutely. Right back to you, brother. What you got for me today?
Well, my time is a little brief, so I'm going to go really quick with this one. As we speak about baseball, because that's what's going on right now.
I knew it was
coming. We see those high-flying O's. Still the talk of the Major League circuit. I'm talking about they have the third best record in baseball, only behind the Tampa Bay Rays and the Atlanta Braves. And unfortunately, they had two of your birds had a disappointing showing in the All-Star game. As a matter of fact, they kind of resulted in the American League losing the All-Star game.
Really?
But you know what? Yeah, I mean, if you watch the game, it just all fell apart for the American League behind Rushman and Batista. And I was really disappointed, but you know what? They were all stars.
That's right.
The team is still doing well. I expect them to be in the playoffs, and I expect them to make some noise in the playoffs.
Okay.
Now, you know, you got the big fight coming up next weekend.
Can't wait.
Spence and Crawford.
Can't wait.
And you know what? Here's the thing. This is a big fight, but neither one of those fighters are listed in the top 10 for pound-for-pound fighters. And, you know, the best pound-for-pound fighters. And this is a big fight.
It is a big fight.
This is a unification fight. And I'm just surprised neither one of those names are listed in the top 10.
I can't wait to watch that either. Who you got?
Well, everybody's picking Spence, but I'm going to go with Crawford.
Okay.
I think he has the talent. And I think he can really outbox Spence. So
that's who I picked too. I picked Crawford too.
Yeah. As you know, training camp will be starting up for the NFL. And you know what's going on? There are a lot of XFL and USFL players. Not only have they signed some contracts to some teams, one-year deals, but a lot of them are being invited to training camps for a lot of teams. There's so many names that's floating around, so many teams that involve. I can't even name them all.
Wow.
And that's what's going on.
Do you
think
the league is going to actually unify at some point? The leagues
will? I really do. I mean, I really think USFL and the XFL will unify. They both play in the spring. There's no reason to have two spring leagues. You know, I really think, and here's a reach, I think that XFL will make the USFL stronger.
Oh, wow. Okay.
Yes.
All right.
And in spite of them losing $60 million, they will continue on next year.
I think they'll do much better next year, actually.
And finally, like I said, my time is brief. I've been finding out that the need for running backs have been declining in the NFL.
Yeah. They're saying it's the worst job in the NFL right now.
And there was a time where the running backs, they held a lot of value on a lot of teams, but because teams are doing so many different things and different offenses, the running back, it's just on the decline right now. You know, Saquon Barkley's talking about, pay me my money, I'm going to sit out. Well, Saquon might be sitting out.
He might be sitting out, yeah. So what's the reason for that? Is that because quarterbacks are being protected so much more and receivers are being protected so much more?
I think it's the design of the offenses these days where the running back is not a big need. And because you can run multiple running backs who have multiple talents, you have some that are good receivers, some that are good blockers, some that are just hard runners. And so you put that three-headed monster together, it's hard to find that three-headed monster in one player. So
right.
You have most running backs on your team. And if we look at the NFL this upcoming season, you will find a lot of teams are using multiple running backs in their offenses.
Not to mention the advent of more running quarterbacks in the league.
Exactly.
Yeah.
You know, they have been said that, you know, your quarterback is a running back playing quarterback.
Right.
So,
right.
You know, that's being said. So, yeah, the need for the running back has been declining.
That's unfortunate.
And their value and their contracts have been declining as well.
Right.
They're
right.
Not getting the big money they used to. And speaking of the NFL, unfortunately, domestic violence rears its ugly head again.
With who?
You have a player on Jacksonville Jaguars. He's a seventh-round pick. He only plays on special teams. And this is the second time this offseason he has been arrested for domestic violence.
Oh.
I'm talking about Chris Claybrooks.
I heard, you know what? Why is he even in the league at this point?
You know, my thing is domestic violence has no place anywhere. And football is a violent sport. And, you know, these young men may need counseling. They need something, because this is serious. These are big, strong men. They play a violent sport. And, you know, the things that they're doing is just bad.
Right.
It's just bad. And there's no place for them to be part of the sport, making all of this money, if this is what they're doing away from the sport.
I agree with you.
And that's just a sad thing. If I want to say one thing, Brother B.
What's that?
A couple of weeks ago, you did a show on affirmative action.
Right.
And I thought it was a great show. You had Judge Bell on. I like some things he said. And you know what? The thing that caught me more than anything is that it's going to affect a lot of black athletes going to colleges.
It really will.
And my thing is, if you're not good enough to accept us for the content of our mind and only our ability to put ourselves on that field and make big money for your school, we don't need to go there
you
anymore.
You don't deserve it. I agree 100%. I'm so glad you said it.
Some of these athletes need to start showcasing their talents along with their intelligence at more and more HBCUs.
I'm so glad you said it, because I agree with you 100%. And I'm hoping that's the trend. I'm hoping that's exactly what will happen.
Well, I'm hoping that it's one of the top five prospects that's coming out of high school will sign for HBCU, and I'm hoping that other players coming out of high school that's being courted by your Colorados and UCLAs and Alabamas and all those other schools decide to go to Howard University, Oregon State University, Alcorn State, and I can name many other HBCUs. And maybe they should go there and say, look, it ain't about affirmative action. You know, it's about accepting us for our intelligence,
right,
not only our talent. On that note, Brother B, I gotta go. I gotta keep my ear to the ground. Like I said, training camp starts. You know, this is my time of year.
I know,
football,
brother.
Football is coming back strong and ever. And I'm gonna keep my eye on those bum birds. They might got something going on down there in Baltimore.
Okay. Well,
probably not. And don't you even think I'm gonna don that purple and gold. Like I told you before, never more. I'm with the. On that note, Brother B, I'm out of here. Peace.
All right, Petty. Peace, brother. All right, you heard it from the Petty. He's got Crawford in the upcoming fight against Spence. That's going to be a huge fight, a huge fight. He's also got these birds going all the way, which I agree with 100%, talking about the Orioles. So, you know, give the birds some support. I mean, those guys are playing lights-out ball. If you can make it to the stadium, make sure you grab a couple tickets. They're not that expensive, and go see the Orioles play. One thing before I go, I wanted to mention real quick, and I actually called this last year. I said as soon as she leaves office, she was going to divorce her husband. And I'm talking about former state's attorney, Baltimore State's attorney, Marilyn Mosby. She's actually filed for divorce from her Baltimore City Council president husband, Nick Mosby. Now, that's according to the Baltimore Banner and WJZ. Marilyn Mosby filed for divorce on Friday. She and Nick Mosby have been together for about 17 years in their marriage. The Mosbys issued a joint statement about the divorce proceedings on Friday afternoon. And they said, after careful consideration and much prayer, they have decided to end their marriage. In that same statement, the power couple asked that their privacy be respected, particularly for their daughters. You know, I had a strong suspicion Marilyn Mosby was going to file for divorce when she got out of office, because Nick just wasn't making things any easier for her. He got himself into trouble while the spotlight was on her, awaiting her federal trial, which is still upcoming. I'm wondering now, though, is if Nick's going to turn state's evidence and turn against her so he seeks favor in his trial. Now, I hope that doesn't happen, but it happens often, and if they're not husband and wife, then, well, he can testify against her. I just have a feeling that this is going to get very, very messy. All right, thanks, Erica, for coming on the show today. Thanks to the Petty, of course, for always having my back and coming on the show every Sunday. And thank you for being here and listening. You don't have to be here and share this hour with me and allow me to share it with you, but you do every week, and I'm so thankful for you for doing it. I got to get out of here, but first I want you to know, if you miss any of the show, you can always go to voiceswired.com. I've got all of the shows chronicled on there by date. You can listen to every show that you've missed. Please do that for me. And also, please get at me at On with Brian Pettaway on Instagram. Let me know what you thought of the show. If you have any opinions about what Erica said today, certainly if you have any opinions about Carly Russell and that situation, I want to know how you feel about that. But mostly what I want you to do today is just relax and chill and do nothing. Because like I say every single Sunday, the best thing about doing nothing is you can quit whenever you want. So do nothing today. Wake up tomorrow and conquer the world. Have a great Monday. Have a great week. Be the best that you can be. And I will catch you here next week with a brand new show. Thanks again for listening to Let's Talk. Have a great week, people. Peace.